Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome back to the Janice Dean Podcast. Today is Earth Day, the annual celebration that honors the achievements of the environmental movement and raises awareness of the need to protect our Earth's natural resources for future generations. My guest today is someone who decided at a very young age to advocate on behalf of our beautiful Earth and encourage others to prioritize the climate, protecting it without using it as a political tool or to cause fear or deny that the Earth and the atmosphere is evolving. Because it is. And we should all care about what's happening to the environment around us, making sure we're doing everything we can to help keep it healthy and safe for the future. Benji Backer is president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition and one of the leading youth environmental voices in our country. He's written a book to give solutions to some of the problems we face right now and in the future. I've admired Benji's work trying to get both sides to care and commit to helping the environment without it being political or divisive. He points out that it's really only been the last few decades where caring about the Earth has become weaponized. It started as a conservative movement that goes all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt. Many consider President Roosevelt to be America's most conservation-minded president because throughout his presidency, he really cared. In a speech to Congress in 1907, he states, "The conservation of our natural resources and their proper use constitute the fundamental problem which underlies almost every other problem of our national life." So my friend Benji wants to continue President Roosevelt's work in our day and age by spreading the word and working with both sides of the aisle to make this a priority. His new book is called The Conservative Environmentalist and features an approach needed to ensure a sustainable future, particularly one that works for America. So please welcome Benji Backer to the Janice Dean Podcast. Why did you want to write this book?
I wrote this book because I am a lifelong conservative activist. I've been active since I was 10 years old. Spoke at CPAC in high school.
Wow.
Was knocking doors and making phone calls for candidates. I made the most phone calls for Scott Walker and his recall election out of anybody in the state. And at the same time, I was a major lover of our environment. I was a hiker, a skier, somebody who loved to sit on a dock in northern Wisconsin where I grew up with my grandpa. I mean, just I loved the outdoors. And I felt like those two things were at odds. Mm. And so I started an organization that kind of prefaced this book to give conservatives a voice in the environment again and get us back to the table. But then I realized there was no book in the entire world that outlined a right-of-center agenda on the environment. I mean, every book that's been written is a Greta book. It's a Al Gore book. And that's great for that part of the country, but that's not where I stand. It's not where the majority of Americans stand. And I'm really hoping that this can kind of break through and chart a new course.
I love that you have Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor of California, mm-hmm. of course, and, you know, former actor and a bodybuilder. He says, "An essential read that shows how protecting our natural resources and advancing America's national interests are mutually reinforcing goals." And I just watched his documentary. Mm. When he became governor, protecting the environment was high on his agenda, and he was a Republican.
Yeah. I mean, that was the norm back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, Republicans were the ones who led the biggest environmental achievements in American history, and people don't realize that, especially in my generation. You have people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I went to school in Washington, and the governor of Washington a few decades ago was the person – was a Republican, Dan Evans, who created the EPA.
Yes.
The Department of Ecology in Washington became the EPA nationally. So there's like this legacy of Republican leadership, and it started with Teddy Roosevelt as well.
Of course.
And we've got to return to that because we have – right now we have the left saying that that the world's going to end and we need these really doomsday policies to get us to where we want to go. And if the world is truly going to end, then their policies would make sense, but it's not. So you have that side of the aisle. And then instead of combating that with our own ideas, we've just decided to sit on the sidelines and let them have the issue. Mm. And as a young person, not only do I care about it, but we're also losing this issue to people who don't have good ideas and that are really harmful for our economy. But what people on the right also realize are that those policies are actually harmful for the environment as well. I mean, the Green New Deal mentality is actually very bad for the environment. And so in the book, I make that case. And if, you know, conservatives who care about the environment want to engage, it's time for us to do it.
We should all care about the environment. And I see it every day. You know, if we have a big storm or a big hurricane, it's like, it's climate change.
Right.
You know, it's coming to get us. And if you don't act now, then you're all going to die.
Yep.
And that's hard for me because, you know, you look at weather, there's cycles. We won't know if a particular hurricane or a bad season was because of climate change for many decades from now.
Right. Yeah, there's this belief that everything that's bad environmentally has to do with climate change. And before humans were here, we were still having hurricanes and mass, you know, wildfires and all those things. Now, I do believe humanity is contributing to that, absolutely. But to blame, like solely blame a storm or blame wildfire and climate change is wrong. And in fact, on wildfires, as I talk about in the book, the fact that we aren't managing our forests is contributing to massive wildfires, and the entire state of California has emitted more from wildfires than it was able to reduce in their carbon emissions from all their different efforts over the last 10 years were wiped out by wildfires. And that could be prevented by common sense forest management. And so when people are blaming these bad events on climate change, not only does it not make sense, but it's actually kind of backwards, because if we were more active in managing some of these things, we would actually reduce carbon emissions too.
Mm-hmm. And look at the EVs right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that they contribute to more pollution than regular fuel, I mean, that's starting to come out now. But a lot of people are like, well, we knew this.
Right, right. I mean, I toured the country in 2020 in electric vehicle for 60 days. I visited 36 different states in 60 days, visiting different energy projects and communities working on this topic and finding solutions. And I was the most pro-EV person possible.
Okay.
And not only did I actually enjoy the drive, but I actually didn't have any problems with charging and all that stuff.
Okay.
But I learned more about the realities behind what actually makes an EV.
Tell me.
And it is about it has a 40,000 mile carbon deficit. So that means that it will never be equal to an internal combustion engine in terms of its carbon output. It's actually worse until the 40,000 mile mark. And then it only gets past an internal combustion engine in terms of having lower emissions if the grid that powers the charging is renewable. But of course, it's usually not.
Yeah.
It's usually powered by coal and natural gas, especially in other countries. And the reason why it has that huge deficit is because you have to mine for so many minerals and they're so heavy, and then they have to be shipped overseas. And those minerals are coming from China and Africa and other countries, mostly funded by China, and usually using slave labor and really, really bad, you know, standards. So what I think the future of EVs looks like, or the future transportation, is not for the government to tell us what we can and can't drive, like Governor Newsom's trying to do in California.
Right.
But to have a balanced approach where you have internal combustion engines, you have hybrids, you have EVs, maybe there are new technologies like hydrogen-powered vehicles and cool ideas that haven't even been invented yet. But it's not just going to be shoving EVs down people's throats, because while there are some benefits, and I saw those firsthand on this drive around the country, there are also some huge drawbacks that the left has completely ignored.
Yeah. Simple thing of they're very heavy.
Right.
These vehicles are very heavy. So a place like New York, where you've got these old parking garages,
mm-hmm.
these vehicles are actually falling through the structures and hurting people.
Jeez.
Yes. I mean, I read that article a few months ago, and even though it's like, oh, well, this is just one example, but it's a real world example.
Right. And they're like, I mean, you look at like a bridge when they are like saying a truck over a certain weight can't go over it. I mean, the weight of a vehicle matters. And that's why I think people don't talk enough about what hybrids can do.
Yeah.
And I actually drive a plug-in hybrid, which mm-hmm. has a much smaller battery. I've driven 1,000 miles and have not filled up on gas. My average mile per gallon is well over 70 miles per gallon. And I have the option to be electric when I need to,
yeah,
or when I want to, I mean, and use gas when I want, when I need to and want to. So, like, I think that the key part of my book that is important is that we need to create an environmental movement of choice. We can't be telling people how to live their lives,
yes,
what energy sources they can use, what transportation methods they can use, what food they can eat. This is not a sustainable path forward,
mm-hmm,
but neither is not engaging. And that's why kind of this vision of nuclear, solar, wind, natural gas, hydropower, geothermal, all of it. We should be doing all of it.
Yeah.
And if we're not doing all of it, then some other country is doing all of it. And so we have an obligation to engage in this balanced way.
And we'll be back with more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You brought up Teddy Roosevelt. One of his greatest legacies was our national parks,
mm-hmm,
you know, and we are forever indebted for him. You know, he was a visionary.
Yes.
And it's as simple as that, you know, preserving our national parks and making the environment and our planet also a priority and make Americans feel good for wanting to do that.
Right. And that's exactly right. I mean, and you have to make it easy for people, because if people have to pay more or do more or change their entire livelihood to be pro-environment, they're never going to do it, nor should they. Lower-income Americans, marginalized communities, people across the world will never adopt pro-environmental practices if it's expensive and difficult.
Right.
So that's how ingenuity and entrepreneurship and technology and innovation come into play. And it's the reason why the government is not going to solve any of these challenges. It's going to be a lot of the private industry. And you look at what Elon Musk has done to catapult EVs. I mean, these big companies were trying to do what Elon has done for decades, and they couldn't figure it out. But this, you know, innovative mind who now is, you know, proud American has really taken it to the next level. And it wasn't the government that did that. In mm-hmm. fact, Elon Musk talks a lot about how the government stood in the way and was incentivizing all these really bad ideas that he basically was jumping ahead of. And it will be people like him and a whole generation of entrepreneurs that solve environmental challenges. It's not going to be the government. And the reason why is because those entrepreneurs and those innovations will help people's lives. They will help people's pocketbooks. It will make their quality of life higher. We can't improve the environment at the expense of people's livelihoods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the other side's been proposing. And there is a definite, diverse, different way forward.
So what can we do? Obviously, I'm talking to you today. You know, you're a young person that wants to make a change. You know, is that sometimes when you get up there, it's like, is it just me? Am I the only conservative that is doing this? You know, like, how do you feel when, you know, a fantastic book got my attention? I want to help you. How do we get more people to help?
Well, I think we've the people who in this country, not just conservatives, but the people who are sick of the radical approach from the left, need to stand up and say, this is actually our issue. And I'm an environmentalist. I'm a person who loves our natural world, and I'm a conservationist, and I want a stake at the table. And we need to prioritize this issue more. So that's the first thing. We need to tell our leaders that this is an issue that matters to us, but in a way that isn't radical and doesn't harm our lives. But it does feel a lot of times like I'm alone.
Mm.
And that's why I wrote the book, because so many conservatives are fearful of the left's approach on this that they've completely tapped out. And with the book, I'm trying to show, through basically tackling every part of the issue, from restoration of ecosystems to energy to transportation to the role of rural communities and fossil fuels, how there's actually a more reasonable path forward. So I really hope people with this book can help me popularize the idea that the environmental movement of 2024 is not the environmental movement of the future. We need to build that ourselves because the environmental movement right now is not doing it for us. And that environmental movement is one that includes fossil fuels. You know, that's a very controversial statement for me to make as an environmentalist, but I believe in fossil fuels as part of the future. I believe in nuclear energy as part of the future. I believe in geothermal. I believe in renewables getting better. But we need to have this sensible energy approach. And we also need to focus on the role of conservation. You know, our farmers and ranchers and foresters and the people in the heart of America know how to take care of their backyards best. And leaning on their community knowledge and helping them, helping equip them with the tools to be more efficient and more productive on their land so that they can have, you know, more food for their families to eat, more food for us all to eat. So there's a real chance for us because of how bad we're seeing the left's policies work in California and in New York and in Germany for us to take this sensible approach back.
What are some of the things that we can do as human
individuals?
Beings? Yes.
I think what it comes down to is efficiency. So what can you do to save energy in your own home? What can you do to drive more fuel-efficient vehicles? What can you do to eat food that is more local? You know, how can you basically be more efficient in the way that you consume? And by the way, usually those things end up saving money, right? Like turning off the lights before you leave saves you money.
Yeah.
Eating local doesn't always save you money, but it can. I mean, if you go to farmers markets and those sorts of things, it really can save you money. And, you know, I think that it's these small steps where you're not trying to like completely change your behavior. You're just trying to slowly improve the way that you're being efficient. And but I would also say it's like take the opportunities when they make sense for you economically. If it makes sense for you to buy a new vehicle that is more fuel efficient, do it. But if you can't, then there's no shame in that. Like, and I don't believe that telling people what they can and can't eat is the right idea. If you want to eat red meat, you should eat red meat. Now, I believe, and I know this firsthand, that all of the things that they say are bad are cleaner and better in the United States. So another easy way to support the environment is to buy American-made. Mm. American-made beef, American-made products at the grocery store, American-made consumer goods. I mean, if something is American-made, 9 times out of 10 or more, it will be cleaner. And so that's one of the easiest things you can do is look for that. And I wish there was more transparency on that, especially in the world of Amazon and those sorts of things.
Well, you're getting the word out here, you know, slowly but surely. People will hopefully, you know, take that advice into account. What were some of the surprising things that you learned writing this book?
I honestly think it was how much the fossil fuel communities want to be a part of the solution.
Mm.
I went to Midland, Texas to see the oil fields. I went to coal communities in Utah. And I realized that people in these communities are not only lovers of the environment, which I already knew, and they've been vilified, but that they don't really care what their future looks like from a job perspective as long as they have a high-paying job that supports their families. And they don't want to be vilified for powering our lives for the last century and being told that they're the enemy. They just want to be part of the solution. And I saw this really cool coal community in Utah where they were shutting down the coal plant, but instead of saying, screw you workers, you know, go find a new job, the coal plant there found a way to basically create a research lab for how to use coal for other products.
Hmm.
So how to use it for clothing, how to use it for a different role in nuclear power, like how to basically use it without burning it. And so these people got to work on something they already knew how to do, but in a sustainable way. And so they don't care about like that. They actually were really proud of that. They're very proud of being part of a cleaner future. So I think it's just that there's actually a lot of Americans who see eye to eye on this that don't realize it.
Yeah.
Like this coal community actually sees very similarly to the community of Seattle that I lived in for 6 years. But Seattle thinks that the coal community is the enemy and the coal community thinks that Seattle's the enemy.
Yeah.
Because they talk to each other that way. And there's actually so much common ground on this issue that Americans can find if we look for it. But because we're stuck in our bubbles, we just don't realize it.
How do we pop the bubbles?
It's to get uncomfortable and start talking to people that we think are the enemy, honestly, and not assume that they're the enemy. Somebody who is liberal doesn't necessarily want to take your life away and steal your car and do all those things. There's a lot of liberals who are sick of that mindset on the left. Like, just because someone's liberal doesn't mean they buy into AOC and Gavin Newsom's ideas. And if they do, maybe it's just a default. They don't know anything different. So don't assume that they want to hurt you. And as for liberals, it's understanding that conservatives care deeply about the environment and that their skepticism of environmentalism does not come from a place of malice on the, from the environmental side. It's because they don't like the solutions and they feel super fearful of them, and rightfully so. I mean, they've been these people have been talked down to by John Kerry and Al Gore and AOC for so long. And I was speaking at the University of Chicago last week. And I called out AOC for – I said, you know, the world would be better off if AOC went to a rural community and just talked to somebody, because she has zero idea what she's talking about and it's harming those communities substantially. Her former chief of staff, her, like, who just stopped being her chief of staff, came up to me afterwards and was like, we visited rural communities. We understand rural communities. It is so offensive for you to say that, especially when you're trying to build a political bridge on this issue. And I'm like, well, what rural communities have you been to? And because your message is so out of touch and the policies are so out of touch. And he's like, well, I grew up in Iowa and Minnesota. I'm like, no, where has she gone? And you couldn't come up with anything. Mm. And so there's this belief on the left that the right doesn't care. There's this belief on the left that they basically are just like, we got to box these people out. And we don't have to visit them or care about them. And people on the left have to realize that's not the case. That's how you pop those bubbles. And there are people like AOC who will never actually take the time to do that. But most people on the left are actually more open to them.
So if AOC called you and said, let's meet for lunch and talk this over,
I would happily do it.
Yeah.
Because I think that I will meet with anyone. Like in Midland, I met with people who thought that I was scary because I care so much about the environment. And then we sat down for lunch and we had this great conversation and we toured an oil field and they're like, wow, like we actually have a lot in common and we actually are allies. And I don't know if I'd have that same feeling with AOC, but I think that we have to get out of our boxes and our bubbles. And like, I grew up in rural Wisconsin and then I went to college in Seattle. So I've seen both sides of this equation. I went to high school across the street from a dairy farm, and I went to college next to a homeless encampment in Seattle. Okay. So, but when you have that perspective of how people are thinking and how people are living, you realize that a lot of the divide on this issue specifically, I'm not saying on like immigration or something, like on this issue specifically, is so unnecessary. And people are like, oh, Benji, that's just like some kumbaya mentality. Like, oh, that sounds really nice in theory. No, this is how it used to be. Like, there's a reason why Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan worked with Democrats on this issue. It's not because there weren't, you know, there wasn't immense alignment. We can get back to that. But I do think that the left is so far gone in so many ways on this issue that it'll have to be conservatives to start that.
Right. And then you see somebody like John Kerry on his private planes.
Right.
And it's like, don't preach to me.
Right. I'm totally fine with private planes, to be honest.
You are.
I would love for people who are successful to be able to do that if they want to. But don't tell us that we can't use fossil fuels.
Right.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's not my job to tell John Kerry he can't fly on a private plane. It's very elitist, but whatever. If he wants to do that, he's successful. Do what you want to do. It's a free country, right? But the American dream should want to reward people for being successful. But then to tell everyone else to not use fossil fuels while your plane burns more fossil fuels in one flight than their truck does in an entire year, it's so disingenuous. And that's where like the hypocrisy is so scary. And I don't think that these people even realize it. Like in the book, I talk about how Leonardo DiCaprio and Al Gore and John Kerry have flown around on private jets for the last few decades, emitting more carbon than any of these communities combined that they're vilifying. And what have they even accomplished? Other than making people feel unheard and unloved.
Yeah.
Like what?
And
what,
scared.
Right. And super scared. What have they actually accomplished that has benefited the world? I can't think of anything. And in fact, I think that they've made the world a worse place. I think Al Gore has done so much damage to this topic, because before him, this issue was a nonpartisan issue that people supported. And then he became the person on climate change. And that's like Donald Trump becoming the guy on some issue that used to be nonpartisan and then expecting the left to buy in. I mean, it just is so backwards. And then I just feel like they've done so much damage.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this. I haven't watched An Inconvenient Truth in a very, very long time. Mm. I would be interested to watch it now and to see all
how wrong it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their predictions were so wrong. But the thing is that they knew that they were wrong. But they knew that it would instill fear and get a reaction from people. And I think they genuinely believe that, okay, the climate is changing. We're contributing to it. And so if I make people really scared with false, baseless statements, that will get closer to the answer that we need. Even like it's basically justifying the way that they're being alarmist to get to a better future. And yet people see that and they're like, wait a second. If you told me that snow was going to stop by 2000 and we just had our record-breaking snow year, like I'm very confused about how I should trust you.
Yeah.
And so, yes, the climate is changing, but it was never going to kill us all tomorrow. Hmm. They knew that. And they lied to you and they lied to us because they wanted to get our attention, build up their name identity, and then try to push policies that would attack the real problem, which is that we have a steadily warming climate, mm-hmm. and we should try to reverse that. But it's not like a doomsday scenario. But they thought, oh, we're not going to get people's attention if we don't call it a doomsday scenario.
Sad, right?
It is. And that's really where politics, I think, is a mess right now, because we're constantly just listening to people who are pushing the most alarmist, you know, policies and ideas because it captures our attention, and they know that, and
right.
they're just playing us like a fiddle.
I just saw Sonny Hostin on The View talk about an earthquake being climate change.
Right. I mean, it's the default. They don't even know what they're talking about. And in fact, I mean, I'm going to be on The View this week.
You are?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Because I think that these tough conversations need to be had.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grateful that they're open to it.
I am too. Good for The View.
Yes. I mean, they need it. And I mean, we've seen them get called out time after time for having a very, very shallow knowledge of these complex topics. And the world would be better off if those sorts of people had a little bit more knowledge about what's actually going on, especially because they have an important, like, people do listen to them.
Yes,
right?
They do.
And so when she says that that's due to climate change, there is a portion of the population that's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And my generation is in a total fear-minded world of the future because they think that their world is going to end.
Mm.
And it's people who just default to that position that are to blame, and it's really disappointing. So I'm hopefully going to correct that course a little bit.
I am so proud. Can I ask how old you are?
26.
Okay. I'm so proud of you, and I'm going to follow you in any way that I can help. You know, I want to be bipartisan on most issues. You know,
mm-hmm.
I the place that I work, sometimes people put me in a box,
right?
But I believe in the things that you believe, and I believe in crossing the aisle and mm-hmm. not being so vicious with each other,
mm-hmm.
because I think we have more in common than we think we do. And
yep.
so to interview somebody like you, Benji, who is trying to make a difference and trying to like shake hands and say, I want to do this too. It's so hopeful.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm sick of the tribal politics in this country, and I'm sick of how visceral we are towards one another. And I believe that an American future that is better than the one today is not possible until we start to understand each other more and start to listen to each other more and start to understand each other's concerns, because people are upset for a reason, and understanding why they're upset is really important. I've dated enough women in my life to know that acknowledging that someone is hurt
yeah.
is pretty important.
Yeah.
And we aren't doing that with each other at all in this country. And I think we have to be open-minded to each other's beliefs if we're ever going to solve important problems. Like, at its core, we will never protect the environment in this country. We will never reduce pollution in the atmosphere or solve any other issue politically if we're at each other's throats all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because in history, the best solutions have come in America and across the world when unlikely stakeholders figured out a way to work together.
Mm.
And you look at President Trump, former President Trump, one of his biggest accomplishments was criminal justice reform. That he worked with Van Jones and Democrats on that, mm-hmm. as well as Republicans. You can't do this alone. One side can't do this alone. We're on the same team. We share the same government. We share the same environment.
Yes.
So we have to talk to each other, and that's the future that I'm trying to fight for.
I love it. And bringing it right back to Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, in his documentary when he was governor, he would have this smoking tent where people would come and have conversations with him where he would smoke cigars. I am not advocating for smoking cigars, but there was something to that. Like, into my, you know, this area that we have a discussion without yelling at each other and sit down on a nice chair and have a cigar with me, you know.
Well, like, maybe the warm-heartedness of talking to each other while smoking a cigar overshadowed the health impacts of smoking a cigar. Like, maybe your heart actually got stronger because you actually were talking to people.
I know, it's a weird example because I don't
it's true. Yeah. You have to share, like, you have to share casual moments of, like, friendship with people to understand. Like, I've gone backpacking in the mountains with some of the most liberal leaders in the entire United States, and they're like outdoor athletes or, you know, people out west who are super, super liberal and work for kind of the outdoor companies, and they're outdoor athletes, climbers and stuff, famous mountaineers. They are some of the best people I've ever met. But you don't realize that till you have, like, I'm not going to understand that if I'm sitting down with them in, like, a political meeting,
yes,
right? But if I get to know them as a human being, mm-hmm, rather than a political person, it's amazing how much common ground that you can find. And I think that that's the future, whether it's in a cigar lounge or in the backcountry of the mountains.
Well, I like your idea, like taking a hike or something.
Take a hike.
One last question. I mean, would you be into politics? Would you be a leader someday?
I would love to see this through before I ever think about politics. Like, I have a goal of making nature and the environment nonpartisan again. Mm. And until I feel like that's happened, which we'll know. I mean, it's a vibe. Yeah. It's a vibe. Until that happens, I have no interest in going to politics because I want to focus just on this. Yeah. And if you run for office, you've got to focus on a whole host of issues. And so I've been asked to run a lot for different congressional seats and stuff. And I appreciate that. And I see an interest in that maybe someday. But I truly, my number one passion is the environment and being outside. And if it's caught up in the culture war and we can't take it out of a culture war, then I'm hurt by that. So I'm trying to change that first.
You are quite a young man, Benji Backer, and thank you for being on the podcast. Let's continue this discussion because I feel very passionate about it as well. And if there's anything that I can do, I want to help. And good luck on The View.
Thank you.
I can't wait. You are just going to be amazing.
Well, I look up to you a lot, like I said, when I didn't realize that we were even being recorded. So thank you for having me here. And I know I kind of just like sent this to you and was but I really appreciate your voice and showcasing this. And I hope this is just the beginning of a friendship.
Thanks again to Benji for coming in today to talk about how important it is for all of us to have discussions on how to protect our planet, the environment, without blaming or denying or using it as a political weapon against each other. And as someone who reports on the weather every day, it is important to keep talking and coming together for the greater purpose of helping the planet for ourselves in the future. You can pick up his book called The Conservative Environmentalist, Common Sense Solutions for a Sustainable Future. I highly recommend it, and it's out in stores now. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine. Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.